Hello everybody, I'm George Milan, thanks for coming back to the channel. So talking about the Russo-Ukrainian war, so we're well into the fifth year, and quite soon it will have gone on longer than the First World War. The point is, of course, we could put this war going back to the spring of 2014, in which case it's gone on for over 12 years. But I'm taking the more conventional starting point, which is 24th of February 2022. And, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. We think that, you know, war pushes us back, and in some ways, perhaps it does, into barbarism. On the other hand, it does make technology advance. When it's urgent to make a breakthrough fast, and governments will throw money at it, and people will take risks, that's where actually technology moves forward more rapidly than any other time. You think how aviation, the First World War, advanced from planes being able to fly about 30 kilometers to planes being able to fly, you know, 2,000 kilometers by the end. All right. So let's see, what's happened in this particular year, in the current 2026, is really advances in artificial intelligence. So drones are becoming semi-autonomous. So they're faster decision-making, doing things almost, you know, automatically programming them. So not have to kind of refer back to a human. Now, there's been talked about for, you know, even since the Obama administration, the US military, was it ethical that these drones would just kill people independently? Say, no, it has to come back to a decision to kill or not, because these drones take on a mind of their own and it's just be too trigger happy and whatever. There's got to be someone who's responsible. But these drones, obviously, they got no conscience, and then it's quicker, easier. But I can see how this is dangerous. Obviously, it could be killing innocent people, could be blue on blue fire and so on. But so the Ukrainians have really advanced for that. And that is deeply impressive, considering, you know, Russia outnumbers them 3.5 to 1 in terms of population, economically about 10 to 1. Given Russia's enormous economic resources, their technology is pathetic. I mean, they're not ahead in anything. I mean, I'm a Russophile in some regards culturally. We're going to like their cuisine or their architecture, their music, their dancing. We like them attitudinally in some ways. Obviously, there's a spectrum of personalities, all personality types amongst all nationalities, good and wicked and indifferent people in every country. And obviously that includes Russia. I'm absolutely not Russophobic or Ukrainianophobic or whatever. I realize there'll be bad people in Ukraine as there are everywhere. But coming back to this, it's extraordinarily impressive what Ukraine has achieved, that they've done it perforce. So they've got these hive mind designs. So how a single operator can control several different drones at the same time. Now, the targeting is now vision-based. They can lock onto certain targets, even if there will be sort of poor visibility. They're able to coordinate a swarm, making it impossible to fend them off. So the Russians were successfully jamming Ukrainian drones a lot earlier, but this doesn't work so well against autonomous drones. The operators themselves are not so vulnerable. And so they're making decisions really fast before the Russians can take countermeasures. So the kill rate is increasing. Plus, the Ukrainian strategy seems to be often to target supply lines. And these are very long, Russia being such an enormous country. And logistics is a big headache right at the beginning of the war. The war was due to go ahead. And then the commander said to Putin, just we're not ready. They had to give him a few more days. Then they went ahead on the 24th of February. And then there was that huge traffic jam coming down from the Belarusian border towards Kyiv. Was two lanes or even three lanes. There was no return lane for vehicles to turn around. That was a big mistake. There were sitting ducks and so on, because they had 200,000 troops in their invasion force. Plus, there were those terrorists in Lugansk and Donetsk even before the war began. But that's an awful lot in terms of rations, ammunition, fuel, and so forth to keep them going. An army marches on its stomach. And I was saying this at the beginning of the war, Ukraine cannot match Russia for firepower. They're at number 10 to 1 on almost all assets. And all right, Russia couldn't bring all that to bear in the theater because, you know, they've got such a gigantic country to guard other borders. And for logistical reasons, they just couldn't send so many assets into Ukraine. But they're often about 5 to 1 in terms of howitzers or tanks or infantry fighting vehicles or helicopters or anything, is to go for those very long supply lines where they're really vulnerable are bridges and tunnels. Because you destroy those can take months to rebuild. Then you have to guard these that ties down so much manpower. Okay, so you just blow up a road or a railway, not the actual bridge or tunnel. So it's faster to repair, but, you know, still there's just endless amounts of road or railway. You can't guard them all. But they haven't been going for that. They're nevertheless being attacking supply trucks and so on. So, yeah, they have the first person view drones. And the drones, they are reconnoitering the battlefield, they do the targeting, and they do the killing as well. So infantry often goes in after drones have killed all the enemy and so on. So there's less infantry presence, so the Ukrainians are less exposed. But supposedly only human beings can hold territory. I don't see why unmanned ground vehicles can't do this. So these drones can be very cheap, as little as $500. They could destroy a missile system or a tank that costs $10 million. The Ukrainians also prioritize destroying Russian air defense, then leaving them very vulnerable to drones. And the air defense obviously requires human beings, and they're more the skilled soldiers, because you know, you take your first day conscript, someone like me, I've got no idea what I'm doing. I'm not a big investment. I'm kind of easily replaced. But there's some soldiers who are very skilled at firing howitzers or operating tanks or whatever. And it takes years for people to train up to that level of skill, or indeed Air Force pilots, stuff like that. And likewise, we're going for the civilian economy, going for things like oil refineries. So that burns some of the oil, it destroys the equipment, it can kill some of the petrochemical engineers. And no, they're civilians. Obviously, you don't want anyone to get killed, or particularly not civilians. But these things operate 24 hours a day. And often you can't strike it without killing somebody. I suppose there may be a lower workforce in the middle of the night. The Ukrainians don't always do that. And I do criticize the Ukrainians sometimes. There was that college in occupied Ukraine. They struck, killed, was it sort of 15 students? That's terrible. If they did that deliberately, that's murder. If they struck a non-civilian target intended to kill civilians, yeah, then that would be murder. I'm not sure whether they did or not. It's wrong, even if Russia's done it lots of times. Okay, so they are reconnaissance, the drones, as well as for destroying the enemy troops and their assets and so forth. So, the Russians may develop more effective countermeasures, but that's why the Ukraine's got to exploit as much as they can in the short term. So starving Russian frontline units of ammunition, of rations and so on, of fuel, so they can't fight effectively, they can't defend their positions, they certainly can't move forward, they may retreat even against orders, they may surrender quite easily, and so on. Some of them said they're better fed in captivity than they were on the other side. I've seen enough interviews of them. It seems to me they weren't coerced at all. And how much can Russia keep this going on? But, you know, there's still Ukrainian cities which are on the front line. Are they going to prioritize saving those? Remember Ukraine's failed counteroffensive in the summer of 2023, trying to break the land bridge, get down to the Sea of Azov. Could they try that again? You know, but they've got like 150 kilometers to go almost. And I don't see them doing that anytime soon. Taking down the Crimea bridge, the Kerch Strait bridge, would be really impressive. It'd be fantastic. You know, they're not being given the Western missiles to do so. They could have taken it down on the first day. And then the land bridge becomes even more vital. And so they're just sitting ducks, all these trucks. They just can't be protected. And obviously, who would want to be a military truck driver, even a civilian truck driver in these places? So very low fuel in the illegally occupied Crimean Peninsula. Will civilians start leaving and so on? As well as striking oil facilities in Krasnodar recently. The Ukrainian drones are getting longer. They're getting more accurate and effective, striking, you know, facilities like Air Force bases, oil refineries in St. Petersburg, 1,100 kilometers from Ukraine. And their range is only going to keep extending, so nothing's safe. Previously, Russia thought, we can put some assets out of range, we can put some factories out of range, but, you know, less and less is going to be out of range. I mean, I know Russia's goodness, you know, from the Ukrainian border is over 10,000 kilometers to the east. But then obviously, you can, if you have those assets there, then it takes them more time to get the front and obviously uses more fuel in doing so. Russia's only got two tank factories. Ukraine might start attacking those. They're actually quite far to the east. You know, shell factories, plane factories, and obviously planes are extremely expensive. They've been buzzing airports, not so much anymore. One thing is, if it destroys, if it's a civilian plane that's empty, these Boeings, they can cost $300 million. Of course, they're not worth that now because they're not new, the ones that Russia has. So that would hurt them economically as well. But so one thing is, Ukraine's got the kind of scattergun approach. What is it? Is it completely to take out the enemy logistics? That would be one strategy. You want to prioritize actually killing troops. That Russia is, you know, 5,000 short each month on recruitment. You could make that worse. And you can't fight without troops, even in the modern day. Or could it be just the economy, destroying oil refineries? They've ever taken off at least 7% of the oil refineries. You can export unrefined oil, but there's less profit on that. And then, you know, Russia doesn't have refined oil into whatever fuel. It doesn't have a few fuel for itself, has to import that, you know, compounding the economic cost of the war. So several different things you could do. I think that the psychological ones of harassing Muscovites is not really the right thing to do. You might accidentally kill lots of civilians. I know they brought home to even well-heeled Russians that, you know, this war is not cost-free for you. Life is getting worse. Your government cannot keep you safe. It's not made you more secure. It's made you less secure. This is what we're going to through every day. You stop, we stop. But Putin is not backing down. But obviously, there's war weariness. They're on both sides. I suppose, you know, revenge is sweet. So maybe they're feeling very gratified, the Ukrainians who suffered so horrifically from such Russian barbarity through the war. But that is how Ukraine is gaining the upper hand in drones. That doesn't guarantee they'll keep it. So I suppose that's what they've got to use it for as much as they can before Russia develops some effectual countermeasure. Well, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, George Callan, 792 Millicom. Goodbye.